Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 57, Satrajit murdered, the jewel returned. Text number 8. Is that right? Toila jonyam ritam prasya jagama gajasavayam krishnaya viditarthaya tapta chakyo piturvadham. Toila dronyam ritam prasya jagama gajasabhayam krishnaya viditarthaya tapta chakyo pitubadham. Mitamtrasya jagama gajasahayam krishnaya viditataya tapta chakyo pituvadam. Tadatranyam mitam pasya jagama gajasahyayam
krishnaya viditataya
tapta chakyo pituvadham. Ladies? Jagamajasahayam krishnaya viditataya tapta chakyo pituvadham. Toila dronyam ritam prasya jagamajasahayam krishnaya viditataya tapta chakyo pituvadham. Toila dronyam ritam prasya jagamajasahayam krishnaya viditataya tapta chakyo pituvadham. Toila
of oil,
dronyam
in a large vessel, mritam
the corpse, prasya
putting,
jagama
she went.
Gajasavayam
to Hastinapur,
the Kuru capital, Krishnaya,
Krishnaya,
to Krishna,
Vidita
Arthaya,
Vidita Arthaya,
who already was aware,
of the situation.
Tapta,
Tapta,
sorrowful,
Achakyo,
Achakyo,
she related,
Pituhu,
Pituhu,
of her father,
Vadham,
the killing. Queen Satyabhama put her father's corpse in a large vat of oil and went to Hastinapur, where she sorrowfully told Lord Krishna, who was already aware of the situation, about her father's murder. Tad arkan yeshvaro rajan anusrityani lokatam aho na paramam kashtam ityasraksho vile patuhu. When Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram heard this news, O King, they exclaimed, alas, aho, alas. This is the greatest tragedy for us. Thus imitating the ways of human society, they lamented, their eyes brimming with tears.
Agatya bhagavam stasmat sabharya sagraja puram satatanvanamara arebhe hantum hartum manim tataha.
The Supreme Lord returned to his capital with his wife and elder brother. After arriving in Dwarka, he readied himself to kill Satadanva and retrieve the jewel from him.
So pi krito jamam gyatva bita prana paripsaya sahoye kritavarmanam ayachatta sacha bravit.
Upon learning that Lord Krishna was preparing to kill him, Satadanva was struck with fear. To save his life, he approached Kritavarma and begged him for help. But Kritavarma replied as follows.
Naham Ishvarayo Kuryam Hilanam Ramakrishnayaho Konukshimaya Kalpeta Tayo Brijinamacharan Kamsasahanu Gopito Yadveshatya Jita Sriya Jarasanda Saptadasha Samyugat Viratogataha.
Kritavarma said, I dare not offend the Supreme Lords, Krishna and Balaram. Indeed, how can one who troubles them expect any good fortune? Kamsa and all his followers lost both their wealth and their lives because of enmity toward them, and after battling them 17 times, Jarasandha was left without even a chariot. Purport, Srila Sridharaswami explains that the word Hilanam indicates acting against the Lord's will, and that Vrijinam indicates an offence against the Lords.
Pratyakyataha sachakruram parashnigraham ayachata sopyaha ko virudyeta vidvan ishvarayo balam.
His appeal refused. Satadanva went to Akura and begged him for protection. But Akura similarly told him, who would oppose the two personalities of Godhead if he knew their strength?
Yaidam lilaya vishvam srijat javati hanticha cheshtam vishva srijo yasya navidur muhita jaya.
It is the Supreme Lord who creates, maintains and destroys this universe, simply as his pastime. The cosmic creators cannot even understand his purpose, bewildered as they are by his illusory maya. Purport. The use of the singular yaha, he who, indicates that the frequent references to the two lords, Krishna and Rama, do not compromise the firm principle of monotheism expressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As explained in many Vedic literatures, the one Supreme Lord expands himself into innumerable forms, yet he remains the one and almighty God. For example, we have this statement in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 33, Advaitamachutam, Anadya, Anantarupam. The one Supreme Lord is infallible and beginningless, and he expands himself into innumerable manifest forms. Out of regard for the spirit of the Lord's pastimes in which he expands himself and appears as his own older brother, Balaram, the Bhagavatam here refers to the two Lords, but the bottom line is that there is one Supreme Godhead, one absolute truth, who appears in his original form as Krishna. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Angum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. These are very intriguing situations in the Krishna Leela. Intrigue. Interesting because we have Krishna and Balaram in Hastinapur as a result of the the machinations, the deceitfulness of Duryodhana and his brothers and associates, who had lured the Pandavas to live in a house of lack, and then the house was set fire to, and the whole purpose of that arrangement was to give the impression that the whole purpose of that arrangement by them, by Duryodhana and co, was to kill Kunti and the Pandavas. As it turned out, by Krishna's arrangement, the personalities that were destroyed in the fire weren't the Pandavas, but there were bodies left, and so it appears as if they had been destroyed, but actually they weren't. They had taken advantage of a tunnel to escape the fire, Krishna and Balaram went to Hastinapur to participate in the funeral. Although Krishna actually knew that there wasn't any cause for distress or for concern, because he knew that the Pandavas, Kunti and the Pandavas had... Well, no, was it Kunti or... Yeah, Kunti. Draupadi came later. Krishna and Balaram are going to Hastinapur with the purpose, or for the purpose of really, you know, performing the funeral rites. And, of course, that is a... distressing? It's a time of deep emotional disturbance, I guess you could say. Funerals are generally not much fun. So, you know, Krishna and Balarama are participating in the last rites of the Pandavas. And of course, you know, Arjuna is Krishna's best friend. And you know, Krishna was very, very close to the Pandavas. His Kunti was his aunt. And so, you know, it was a deeply moving situation. Ordinarily, the death of your best friend and your family members would be a moving and difficult situation. But Krishna knew that they weren't killed, and so consequently he and Balaram would have had to have sort of play along with the situation and honour the seriousness, the severity, the sombre mood of the occasion. So there's this setting of intrigue, of crossing and double crossing, in Hastinapur. And also we've got the same kind of a situation going on in Dwarka as well, because here you've got the situation where there's so much trouble being created by this shaman Tucker Jewel that Satrajit had acquired. It was a highly desirable jewel because it could produce, you know, immense quantities of gold. You know, if there were such a jewel, it was highly desirable. Satrajit was under the impression that because of his owning the Shamantaka jewel, then he was, you know, almost invincible. He actually fell into a bit of illusion as a result of having this very valuable possession. This is why wealth is actually shunned by the devotees in one sense, because being very wealthy, having lots of money, gives you an opportunity to manipulate, to control, to orchestrate the situation so that one can be very comfortable. With wealth, one is provided with sense gratification and with an opportunity to surround oneself with material opulence, with material facility, which is what everybody's working for, basically. I mean, think about it. We're all working very hard to put a roof over our heads, to feed our families, to feed ourselves, to protect ourselves, and to try to mitigate the difficulties of material of existence, of life. So Satyajit had fabulous wealth as a result of the tons of gold that the Shamantaka jewel was just producing every day. He didn't have to do anything, basically just worship the Shamantaka jewel, and then all his gold would come out. Who wouldn't want such a facility? Everybody's looking for a place where the money comes from. And everybody's looking for a quick access to the money. I remember when I was a kid, very, very young, must have been three, maybe a little older than three, and I remember my parents used to travel from Francis, the town where we lived, a very small town where my father was a one teacher school or two teacher school. And every Friday afternoon, we would drive to Narakot and buy all of our groceries and, you know, basically do the shopping for the next week. And I remember my dad taking me to the bank, and I saw the teller push this. He put a piece of paper over, you know, his withdrawal slip, and then the teller just pushed the money out to my father. I thought, wow, this is the place. We found it. This is the place where you go to get the money. Somehow I worked out that money was important. I don't know how I worked that out, but it was a great... I thought, gee, this is the place. Of course, after that, I thought my father was an unlimited source of, you know, wealth, because he knew the place where to go and get the money. So Satyajit had that facility. He had all of the money. And so as a result of that, he was privileged to have a great deal of material facility. But it's mentioned by the commentators, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that actually that which was maintaining him and protecting him ended up being his downfall. Because the problem with having a great deal of facility is that one becomes attached to it. One becomes dependent upon it. In fact, it's recommended for the devotees not to become dependent on anyone or anything, other than Krishna, of course. Because even if one is fabulously wealthy, in due course of time, one will be separated from one's wealth. It is not permanent. Adhyanta vanda kunteya na teshu ramate buddha. The intelligent, the wise, don't seek solace in things material wealth, fame, influence, or whatever. In and of themselves, knowing that they're temporary, asat. So, Krishna recommended to Satyajit, you should give this jewel to Ugrasena, as Gangaswara was mentioning yesterday. Give it to Ugrasena, and then that is the right thing to do. You know, he must have already been fabulously wealthy from all of the gold that the jewel had produced for him, so it wasn't as if he was going to be in need by giving it to the king or to the emperor. But Satyajit didn't follow Krishna's advice. He didn't follow Krishna's advice, even though Krishna's advice was for his best interest. Krishna's advice is always for a person's best interest, but because he was so attached to the jewel, he couldn't see that Krishna's instruction was beneficial for him. He was too attached to his material facility. This is not unusual, you know, devotees, materialistic persons, are given spiritual instruction, but they reject it because they can't see the benefit for themselves. They only see it, they see the initial inconvenience. You know, spiritual life means, generally speaking, initially some inconvenience. But of course, that inconvenience has a long-term benefit. But rather, persons attached look at the initial inconvenience and then reject it. Their focus is on the immediate benefit for myself, not realizing that the immediate benefit will cause, in the long term, a great deal of distress. So that's what happened to Satyajit. He didn't want to hand over the Shamantaka jewel to Ugrasena, and instead he mistook Krishna's advice as being Krishna wanting to get the jewel for himself. You know, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. He's thinking, oh, I want to hang on to the jewel, and Krishna wants it too. So he's just being greedy, like me. Huh? And so when, you know, Prasena went into the forest. You know, he put the jewel on for the day and he thought he'd go riding around looking good. And he was, as a consequence, then killed by the lion. And then the lion was killed by Jambavan. And then Jambavan gave the jewel to his kids to play with. You know, it was just lying in the kids' playpen. So then Satyajit, you know, spread rumours, you know, that actually this is Krishna, he's stolen the jewel, he actually wanted it for himself. And Krishna wanted to then correct the situation, to clear his name, because, you know, Satyajit was accusing him of stealing the jewel from him, but actually that wasn't the case. And so Krishna, with his friends, I think Balaram was there also. Was it Balaram? Was it? I'm not sure. So anyway, they went into the forest. They went searching for Prasena, and then they found his dead body, attacked by a lion. You know, obviously been killed by a lion. And then they went further, and they found the lion had been killed also by Jambavan. Then, searching further, they found the residence of Jambavan, and then Krishna went and fought with Jambavan, and then Jambavan realized that this was that Krishna was actually Ramchandra, his worshipful lord, and you know, he wasn't attached to the jewel. He's just as is described in that section of the Bhagavad Gita, that he's a bear. So, you know, bears, monkeys, they don't have much appreciation for jewels. So he didn't mind. Yeah, take back the jewel, no problem. But then he also, in appreciation for the Lord's position and his relationship with him as a servant, then he gave his daughter in marriage to Krishna. And Krishna went back to Dwarka, and the residents of Dwarka had left because Krishna hadn't come out of the cave, and they were quite distressed, and went back to Dwarka and then prayed to Durga, I think it was, you know, please bring Krishna back. Then the goddess of Durga told him, yes, Krishna will come back. Then immediately Krishna came back at that point in time. And Satyajit then felt very, very bad about his having blasphemed basically Krishna. You know, his attachment was exposed in one sense, and his mentality was exposed in criticizing Krishna. But in reality, Krishna was faultless. He hadn't taken the jewel. He wasn't interested in the jewel for himself. He was simply thinking of the welfare of everybody in having the jewel deposited with Ugrasena, who, as the monarch, as the king, would look after it and use it appropriately, because he's a devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord. So Satyajit was exposed, and as a result of that, he felt very bad, and he offered them, Krishna, back the Shamantaka jewel, and also offered him Satyabhama's hand in marriage. Which Krishna accepted, although he didn't accept the Shamantaka jewel. Satyajit kept the jewel. Then we find at the end of the chapter, in the beginning of this chapter, then Krishna gets the message that the Pandavas have been killed, And so then he goes to Hastinapur to participate in the funeral rites of the Pandavas. In the meantime, Akrura and Kritavarma meet with Satadhamva, right? Yeah. And they encourage Satadhamva to steal the jewel from Satrajit. And there's this that verses that we were, you know, they said to Satadhamva, you know, Satyajit had been promising everybody that they could marry Satyabhama. He promised us that we would marry Satyabhama. And then what did he do? He gave him to Krishna, gave her to Krishna. So he deserves, you know, for causing so many of the princes and kings this, because every prince or king that came to Satyajit and asked for Satyabhama's hand in marriage, and he said, yes, okay, I agree. So everybody thought that they were going to be married to Satyabhama. And so they had cause to, you know, agitate the situation. Although it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that actually that wasn't the case. They were upset with Satyajit for having criticised Krishna, because they're Krishna's devotees actually. But on the pretext of having lost the opportunity to marry Satyabhama, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it doesn't quite make sense. You know, why would they be envious of Krishna marrying Satyabhama if they were his devotees? And especially if you see here in these texts, when Satadhamva finds out that Krishna is coming back and wants to avenge the death of his father-in-law, then Satadhamva goes to Kritavarma, he goes to Akura and he says, help me, help me. And they said, no way, we're not going to help you. We don't want to oppose Krishna. Anybody who knows who Krishna is and how powerful he is would not consider opposing him. Right? This is the nature of the devotee. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that actually their mood was to settle a score, if you like, with Satyajit. So therefore they said to Satadhamva, you know, he should follow the path of his brother, which means, you know, he should be killed. And of course, actually, you know, it's hard to understand why that kind of mentality exists in the mind or in the heart of a devotee. But it's explained that Akrura and Kritavarma had some reactions coming to them for other misdeeds or other bad association. Kritavarma was a friend of Kamsa, and as a result of that association, then he had this somewhat misguided mentality in encouraging Satadhamva to kill Satyajit. And also it's mentioned that Akrura was cursed by the gopis because he took Krishna away. And so therefore he also had this somewhat deviant mentality for a devotee in wanting to have Satyajit killed. So somewhat, it's intriguing. There's intrigue going on. Just as there was intrigue in the luring of the Pandavas. So it seems in the royal palace, in the palaces of the kings, in the association of the kings and emperors of the world and the rulers of the world, there was, you know, a lot of intrigue, plotting and counterplotting and so forth. And you can see why the devotees generally avoid persons in these kind of positions, because they're very attached to their position, they're attached to money, they're attached to power, and they'll do anything to protect, keep it for themselves. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not see Prataparudra Maharaj for that reason. You know, he didn't want to associate with Prataparudra Maharaj because he was in Prabhupada's words, a pound, shillings and pence man. Huh? And we've seen that even in the history of ISKCON, persons become very powerful, get a lot of money, and then it can corrupt them. Dangerous. So therefore the sannyasis and the householders and the brahmacharis, everybody is recommended to live a simple lifestyle. Uncomplicated lifestyle, because, and you can see here, all this intrigue, all this manoeuvring, all this manipulation just creates a mental disturbance. Very disturbing situation. And so what happens? As a result of Satyajit being killed, then Satyabhama's completely upset. Her father's been killed, naturally enough. One's upset, one would be upset. One should be upset if somebody so close is killed in such a way. Very heinous crime. And then, Shatadamra then stole the... He also wanted the, you know, like everybody else, he wanted the Shaman Tucker jewel, so he stole it. Then went off. So, as a result of that, Satyabhama was so upset. She wanted Krishna to bring her father back to life, which she knew that he could do. And so therefore she put him in a big vat of oil to preserve his body. You know, in the 60s they were selling sort of like refrigerator units with liquids and so forth, where when a person died then they promised to keep them in these refrigerated units until such time as, you know, it was discovered how to bring people back to life. You pay a lot of money and then you can have your body preserved. I think they had to turn the switch off at some point in time because it wasn't working, and neither did they find the elixir of life. So and then she went to Hastinapur with the news that her father had been killed, in great distress. We have here the word topta. Topta chakyo pitu vadham. My father has been killed and I am suffering. Topta means burning. Just like we have in the prayers to Radharani, we have the word at the beginning of the verse, topta kanchana gorangi, which means she has a form like molten gold. Tapta kanchana. Kanchana means gold. Tapta kanchana. Tapta means burning, or in this case, molten. So, you know, in material existence, we are burning up. Tapta. So she was aggrieved at the loss of her father. Tapta chakyo pitu vadham. So therefore she went to see Krishna, because Krishna already knew what had taken place. Vidita artaya. He understood the essence, the what was actually going on in the situation. As a result, then Krishna and Balaram were very much distressed. Here, aho na paramam kashtam, alas, for us, parama means the greatest. So they say, oh, this is the greatest tragedy, because they already knew about it. But and it is interesting here. It is mentioned anusritya nirlokatam. Following, anusritya means following. Nirlokatam, the ways of the ordinary human beings. So Krishna and Balaram, actually for them there is nothing to lament. They are completely transcendental. They're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So really there is nothing that affects them, being transcendental to the comings and goings of material existence. But because they're acting, here it's mentioned, imitating the ways of human society, so therefore Krishna and Balaram show great distress. And of course, the impetus for that showing of emotion, of lamentation, of distress, of loss, was the tears of Satyabhama. And in order to reciprocate with her, then Krishna and Balaram vowed to return to the capital and avenge the death of Satyajit. And so we have this setting now where Satadanva has found out that Krishna is going to kill him. He's going to avenge the death of Satyajit, and he's extremely distressed as a result. So he then went to see Kritavarma and Akrura, because they were the ones who egged him on to kill Satyajit. And so he's going to them, now protect me, please protect me, please help me, you're my friends, please help me. And they said, no, sorry, we don't want to act against the Lord's will. And if we were, and we don't want to commit an offence to Krishna. There's a nature of a devotee. That is that they don't want to act in any way that's contrary to Krishna's desire. And they're careful to avoid offences. Knowing Krishna's position. And so we have this last verse here. Ya idam lilaya vishvam svijat javati hanti cha cheshtam vishva srijo yasya navidu mohita jaya. It is the Supreme Lord who creates, maintains and destroys this universe simply as his pastime. The cosmic creators cannot even understand his purpose, bewildered as they are by his illusory maya. So, Akrura and Kritavarma are aware of Krishna's position. Ishvaro, this word's mentioned a few times here. Ishvaro, the two controllers. Of course, there's one controller. That's Krishna. Om Idam. Adapunam idam. He is the complete whole, the complete source of everything. And it's mentioned here that even though he's described as being two, actually he is always one. Even though the Lord manifests himself in various manifestations, the verse is quoted here, Advaitam, Achyuptam, Anadi, Anantarupam. Advaitam means he is without duality. He's one. But there, and this is somewhat confusing for people because, you know, on the one hand, it's described how he is one, but then on the other hand, it's described how he is anantarupam. He has many forms. So how can he be one and then many at the same time? Yes, achintya. Yes, inconceivable how he does it. Certainly we can't do it. Although it is interesting. I was thinking about this morning. There are instances of the devotees also being more than one personality. Right? Just like we have in Krishna Leela, a devotee has a certain personality, and then in Ram Leela they have another personality. And in Chaitanya Leela they're again another personality. So even for the devotees, it's not this potential, if you like. This potency is not just kept by Krishna alone, but Krishna also gives that facility to the devotees. And of course the explanation is that Krishna is like an actor who assumes different roles in order to interact and relate with his devotees. Krishna is one person, is the supreme person. And even though there are many individual units coming out of him, still he remains the complete whole. You know, in the material realm, if you take something away from another thing, then it's minus that bit that you've taken away. But Krishna's potency is such that he's not a materially, he can't be materially calculated. So that if Krishna produces an expansion of himself, that doesn't mean that he in and of himself is any less complete as a result of that expansion of himself. You know, Prabhupada talks about transcendental mathematics, where 1 plus 1 equals 1 and 1 minus 1 equals 1. In other words, he remains complete. So the Lord is the complete whole personality, Advaitam, non-dual, Achyutam, unconquerable, Anadi, without a beginning, Anantarupam, who manifests in multifarious forms in order to reciprocate with the multifarious living entities and their relationships, their eternal relationships with him. So, Akura and Kritavarma understand, certainly Akura, and it indicates here also Kritavarma, understand Krishna's position, his transcendental position, and that one shouldn't go against the Lord's desire. And so therefore, they were reluctant to oppose Krishna and Balaram, knowing that it would be very, very dangerous for them. They didn't want to displease the Lord. But it seems, it's interesting because at this point they're not keen to displease the Lord, but they didn't mind encouraging Satadamba to kill Satyajit. So how do we, you know, So, anyway, as I explained, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that, you know, their main motivation was that they wanted Satyajit punished for his criticism of Krishna. And also that there was some tinge ill motivation, if you like, as a result of some offences that they'd committed. Which really, you know, underlines the potency of association also, when you think about it, you know, how powerful material association is. Kritavarma had associated with, you know, well, he's a relative of Kamsa, and as a result of that association, even though he was a devotee, and, you know, when it came to the crunch, then their devotional characteristics came out. And of course, we see that in the devotees, we see it in ourselves. We want to surrender to Krishna, but because of bad association, sometimes we find it difficult to actually completely comply with Krishna's desire and Krishna's indication as to how we should act, how we should perform our duty. And we're seeing it here. They're devotees, exalted devotees, obviously, but even exalted devotees have to be very, very careful. What speak of, you know, little devotees, not exalted devotees, have to be very careful about who we associate with, because it can cloud the devotional mood, the devotional sentiment. So therefore, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the qualification of a devotee, asat sanga tyag. One of the first qualifications of a devotee is that they give up material association, because material association means acting in a way that's offensive or contrary to Krishna's desires. Hila, what was that word? Hilanam means acting against the Lord's will. Hilanam, offence. And Vrijinam, creating trouble as a result of offence. So that's the general mood of the non devotees. Their behaviour is offensive, and a result of the offences that they commit, they get trouble. They get reactions. So many reactions come about as a result of not acting according to Krishna's desire, Krishna's recommendations. Whereas in the Upanishad, it's mentioned that if one follows actually the Lord's instructions, then one can go on living for hundreds of years, because then one doesn't get any reactions, any sinful reactions to one's activities. So if one's working in cooperation with Krishna, then one actually, not even figuratively, but practically one lives eternally. But if one acts in a way which is contrary to Krishna's desire, then it's stated in the Shastra, actually you're as good as dead. Right? Certainly it means you will have to take birth again and again and again. But one is acting in ignorance of one's spiritual position, and in ignorance of the reactions that one gets as a result of those activities. So we can see here that even though Akura and Kritavarma had some covering, still, because they're their innate quality, their inherent quality, their natural tendency is to be a devotee. They're Krishna's devotee, and it got temporarily clouded, that devotional mood, by some bad association or some offensive behaviour. So that's a lesson for the devotees, is to avoid, you know, association with persons too attached to material things, or avoiding becoming attached to material possessions, to to position, to wealth, and these things, because when one becomes attached to these things, then it can cloud our good intelligence, our good sense. And then as a result of our intelligence becoming clouded, then we act in a way which is contradictory to Krishna's desire, counter to Krishna's desire. And as a result of that, then there will be trouble, as is experienced by, as is witnessed here by these, this intrigue going on in the palace. And all as a result of attachment to the wealth and the position that comes with the wealth provided by the shaman Takajul. And yet, you know, when you think about it, that's what everybody's working so hard for. Everybody's working hard just to get money. And what happens? All it does is create trouble for you. There's trouble getting it, and then when you've got it, trouble keeping it. When you think about it, of course, we need a certain, not that we don't, you know, want money. You know, Prabhupada said, you know, you can give as much money for the devotees. We need money to preach and to maintain the devotees and the temple. And so we're not opposed to money as such, but the money should be used in the proper way. When the money and a position is accumulated just for ourselves, then it'll be the source of great anxiety and difficulties. When we take the money, and this is why Prabhupada says, you know, the brahmanas, they're given money in the morning, by the evening they spend it all. Because they understand, actually it's Krishna's wealth. It's the facility is Krishna's, the wealth is Krishna's, it all belongs to Krishna. So it all comes from him. And so therefore, it should be used for the benefit of everybody. That's why, you know, we could surmise, I suppose, that, you know, Krishna wanted the jewel to be given to Ugrasena because he would use it for the benefit of everybody. That's the nature of the saintly kings. They were guided by the brahmanas for the benefit of the whole of society. Not, you know, plotting and scheming how to get it for themselves, but rather use the facility under the direction of the brahmanas for the benefit of everybody. That's enlightened leadership. So the brahmanas, you know, that's their mood is one of renunciation. And as a result of that mood of not thinking it's for me, but rather it's for Krishna's service, then they're relieved of so much difficulty and distress. They can live a very much more peaceful existence, untroubled existence, because they're not attached to keeping the wealth. It'll come in the morning, by midday it'll be utilized for some other purpose. So, there's a lesson in this. Satyajit, the very thing that was maintaining his position ended up being his downfall because he was attached to it. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes.
In the
what?
The Ishopnishad.
Yes.
Regarding the devotees, is there are three categories of devotees like neophytes and Madhyam devotees?
Yes.
And then Mahabhagavat.
Yes.
So neophyte devotees, they don't have any knowledge, but they think that there is nobody knows anything. He is a supreme. And Madhyam, he discriminates among the devotees, like who has the good knowledge, so he has stayed with him rather than
neophytes. Yes.
And the Mahabhagavat.
Yeah.
That's why he thinks that this guy, he is very much than me. So there is some discrimination. The Madhyam devotee always, there should be a discrimination among the devotees.
Yes. Yes. Yes, there should be discrimination. We should discriminate. That's called intelligence. Right? You know, it's just like we may theoretically understand that everybody is a spirit soul, but we don't, you know, go and embrace a crocodile, for example, or a tiger. So we have to use our intelligence, especially when it comes to association, although sometimes we don't, and so therefore we have, you know, we find ourselves in difficulty.
Do we know if Satyabhama wanted to marry Krishna? Was there a desire to marry Krishna? Or was she just passed on by the father?
Do we know?
Does it say?
I don't know. I don't know. Does anybody know? She wasn't like Rukmini. Different situation. I don't know. I'd have to do a bit of research. Why don't you have a look in the Krishna book and see? And let us know. What do you think?
She was gifted by...
Yeah, she was given by Satyajit. It's a silly question in one sense, because, you know, all of the queens, all of Krishna's queens in Dwarka were completely attached to him and had great affection for Krishna. So, but, you know, each one of them was what's the word? Each marriage was unique. Had unique features.
I was thinking because he didn't take the jewelry, he took the daughter.
Yes, because she was considered, because, and it mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Satyabhama was the real jewel of Satyajit, not the Shaman Tucker jewel. The real jewel was his daughter. And so Krishna was happy to take the real jewel, not the, you know, the stone. So she must have been very, you know, what's the word? Desirable, qualified, highly qualified, and desirable. And you can see, you know, all of these princes were upset that Krishna got to marry her, because, you know, they all thought, oh, Satyajit's promised his daughter to us. We're going to marry her. So they're all dreaming away, oh, I'm going to marry Satyabhama, and then Krishna marries. And they're all upset. So she must have been very highly qualified and attractive.
Can you tell us anything about your trip to America?
Anything about my trip to America? We stayed in New Vrindavan. Radha Vrindavan Chandra is very beautiful deities. Lord Nityananda has a funny smile, and Lord Chaitanya looks very serious. And they're interesting deities there, because they're made from nim wood. They're wooden deities that are worshipped on the altar in New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan, it's an interesting temple, because you come into the temple, you've got Prabhupada on this side, you've got Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra on that side, and directly in front you've got Radha Vrindavan Chandra, you've got Gaunitai, and you've got Gopal Nathji, Srinathji on the right hand side. So, and then on the side of them you've got Lord Sringadev. And there's another altar there where apparently they had Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman. They had another set of deities there as well. So, you know, it's hard to pay your obeisances without sticking your feet to it in the wrong direction, because there's just deities everywhere. And um, the facility there is actually quite well developed. There's a big lodge in the temple. There's lots of guest rooms. There's cabins. We stayed in cabins. All of this was built in the 80s. It's a bit run down now, because you know, in its heyday there were close to 1,000 devotees living at New Vrindavan, and now there's not that many. They had, I think, up to 3,000 acres of land. Now they have a lot less. They sold a lot off. But yeah, it was pretty, you know, travelers, 24 hours, practically speaking, travel is very exhausting. So the first couple of days we were there, we basically rested in a devotee's place in New York. Then we drove, 8-hour drive from New York to New Vrindavan. And, you know, I realized a lot of things fell into place when I saw that, you know, when I saw America and American culture and the people and the buildings and everything. It's not just in the movies, it's real. It's like that, exactly like that. Bindu Madhava's house is an interesting house. It's about 100 years old. He lives in a fairly, in a middle class area of New York called Freeport, which is, you know, people are fairly well off there. The man next door had a Maserati and a BMW and a Mustang, and, you know, he's a vice president of a fairly big company there. His number plate was, on his Maserati, the number plate was 250 mph. So, well off. And but it was interesting, the house was 3 stories, with also with a cellar. Just a different style of living. You know, we're used to living in open spaces, and our houses are all flat. And, well, not in Abbott Park, but generally, you know, Australia means a big backyard, and you know, there it gets very cold. So that down in their cellars, they have bunkers where they have the boiler room, and, you know, that heats up the water, which then heats up the whole house. So, you know, different way of living, different lifestyle. And that struck me as being big. You know, everything in America is big. The cars are big. The people are big. They eat too much. A lot of fat people driving around in big, you know, F-250s, F-350s, and big Dodgers and big Pontiac. And I was told that actually cars have gotten smaller because the price of petrol's gone up and cars have gotten smaller. But, you know, there's just so many people there. There's millions of people. 60 million people, something like that. There's a lot of people. 120 million.
I think
was it?
150.
I think it was 150 because it's 15 times the population of Australia. No, that'd be 300 million.
Yeah, it's
300 million. Anyway, there's a lot of people there, and, you know, it shows, because we were driving down the highway, then we saw lots of these distribution centres. And, you know, there's a distribution centre in over near Laverton for Kmart. And, you know, I guess it's got about 20 doors where the semi-trailers come up and they load up the vans. A number of these places that we went past, you know, we counted the numbers on the doors, 384, right? And there's just semi-trailers just parked everywhere, you know, just huge. So it's big. Everything's big, which is you know, a little. And, you know, the roads are always full. I know where I prefer to live. Because, it's, you know, and with all of the people and the traffic and everything, it's very passionate. Although, my experience was that people actually very friendly. my, you know, people are actually easygoing and friendly, even though they don't know the devotees. I even in New York, you know, I'd heard many stories about how in New York, you know, you could easily be mugged or robbed or whatever. Because that's some years ago. We were telling Bindu Madhava, you know, is it safe to go downtown? And he was just laughing. You know, it's just, it's quite safe these days. But, you know, the environment is such that actually if our preaching was managed and coordinated, I'm sure we could create as positive an environment for preaching and, you know, acceptance of Krishna consciousness as we have in Australia. People are, you know, people are the same everywhere, pretty much. Even when I go to India, I don't find people are antagonistic or particularly, you know, intimidated by devotees, especially not in India. So, and yet, we discovered in America there's very few restaurants. They did have restaurants, but they couldn't for one reason or another. But they had found it difficult to maintain. And I was just thinking, you know, if they had more prasadam distribution, then people would be more favourable. And, you know, it's the same environment pretty much that we live in. So why, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness should be able to take off or be effective over time if it was, you know, managed. And of course, and that's illustrated by the fact, you know, on Saturday we had the Rathyatra parade down Fifth Avenue. You know, Fifth Avenue is arguably one of the most important, you know, streets in one of the most important cities of the world. You know, New York is huge. If you could imagine downtown Melbourne multiplied by 20 times, that's Manhattan Island. That's Long Island. Manhattan's on Long Island. So that's, you know, that's just full of skyscrapers. So pretty much 20 times the amount of skyscrapers that we've got in Melbourne. That's the and Fifth Avenue goes straight down the middle. The Empire State Building is on Fifth Avenue. And people were super, you know, super friendly. And blown out by the, you know, there's 3,000 devotees in the parade. And three kirtans, three big carts. So that was quite, that was inspiring. And you know, because New York is where the Hare Krishna movement started. So, you know, people are quite favourable and friendly there. But, yeah, a lot of travel and meetings were good. We spent 5 days basically working on plans, future planning, rather than dealing with reactive business and you know, routine business. The GBC were able to focus on the future, you know, or how we can improve our management of ISKCON, how we can increase our preaching. I was working on the preaching subcommittee. There are a number of other subcommittees. One committee working on the position of Prabhupada, one committee working on the constitution, another team working on team building, another group working on resolving the issue of the parallel lines of authority within ISKCON, the authority of the guru and the authority of the GBC and the institutional management systems. So, you know, we weren't dealing, although we did deal with, you know, day-to-day problems, they were more in the background and more emphasis and focus was on forming a culture of strategic planning within the institution so that we can actually, you know, rather than just be reactive or being stagnant in one sense, static, that we can generate some more dynamic vision for preaching within ISKCON and expand our preaching as it should be. Which is what Prabhupada wanted the GBC to do. That was one of their responsibilities, is to plan and lead the preaching. So, you know, what's happened over the last couple of years, there's a momentum to, you know, increase the number of meetings that the GBC are having so that actually they have some relevance as leaders of the society. Because, as far as we're concerned, how much relevance does the GBC have to us in our day-to-day lives? How much? What's the GBC? Exactly. You don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about it. But, you know, we're lucky. We're lucky in one sense because in Melbourne we have preaching and, you know, we have book distribution, we have Prasadam distribution, we have active membership. But there are places, there are temples in the world that are languishing for lack of preaching spirit and lack of coordination, lack of good management. Right? So, you know, and America is unfortunately an example of that in many situations, many cases. So, you know, one of the purposes of regularly meeting is to, you know, kickstart that entrepreneurial mood that Prabhupada actually wanted ISKCON to have and to be. You know what I mean? To actually get the preaching going again in places where there were difficulties in the 80s, in the 90s, and then as a result of those difficulties, then those temples didn't recover. Say, for example. So the governing body's purpose is to provide that leadership. So that's what we were, you know, that was one of the issues that we were discussing and working on. So that was very successful. And there'll probably be more meetings, and even some changes, probably changes or adjustments at the higher level. That's, you know, the GBC, the governing body level. In fact, you know, in ISKCON we basically have three levels of management. We have the governing body, which is the international, you know, leadership that oversees everything. Then we have regional management, where you know, the local leaders oversee a national or regional development of Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, we have the lowest level of management, if you like, which is the temple or the preaching centre or the preaching venture, if you like. Because, you know, preaching these days doesn't mean necessarily just a temple. Right? So the idea is if we strengthen the top level of leadership, then that will have a flow-down effect where we can build ISKCON by good leadership, by good planning, by creating strategic initiatives that will actually build the society, build on what we've got at the moment. Not that everything is bad necessarily, but certainly it can be improved and brought up to the level that Prabhupada wanted it to be. But right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we did. Lots of meetings, if you like meetings. And lots of prasadam. They stuffed us full of prasadam. Which is not bad, I suppose. That's one thing I've noticed in ISKCON, you know, you don't have to worry about getting a decent feed. Well, certainly the temples that I've been to, I've never ever had to worry about getting well fed. So just in case you're worrying. My biggest anxiety when I left Adelaide to come to Melbourne was, I wonder if the prasadam's any good. It's my biggest anxiety. But you don't have to worry about it. Alright, we should finish here. Jayapataka Maharaj is coming tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, so he'll be giving classes tomorrow evening, and Sunday morning we'll be having an initiation ceremony, so we should Krishna, I'll have to tell him, but there'll be initiation on Sunday morning, and I think Maharaj is leaving on Monday. Not sure how early. And there's Harinam tonight, I think. Huh?
Yeah.
6 o'clock? 6:30 downtown? Yeah. So, yeah. Put your warmest woolen socks on. And should have a nice kirtan tonight. Okay, Grantu Ajahn Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.